In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Many researchers into Bigfoot know the habitat of this elusive human-like creature extends beyond the Pacific Northwest and into any heavily wooded regions with fresh running water, a deer population, or access to livestock. The iconic Patterson-Gimlin footage brought the image of this ancient people into the public consciousness in 1967. However, within a few years, films such as The Legend of Boggy Creek soon restored Bigfoot to the pantheon of mythical giants. The media placement continues to this day, from Chewbacca in Star Wars to any unknown monster in the woods. However, the reality is that descriptions of eyewitness encounters fill hours of interviews and pages of books with intriguing composites of forest giants. One particular encounter in Ontario, Canada, documented something beyond the evidence of a bestial scream echoing in the hollows. Our guest, Mike Patterson, brings profound evidence to the table of Sasquatch research. His encounters began in 2008. And he's documented speech and vocalizations of a forest person known as Neff. Mike believes they're an ancient interdimensional species, a reality that's intentionally covered up. Not unlike our last interview with Crow 777, first-hand investigation and evidence gathering is the only information to rely on when formulating an understanding about the ancient ones. Mike joins us to talk more about his vocal documentations, the interference he's experienced, and the implications of revealing this level of truth to society's current belief systems. His website is SasquatchOntario.com. Mike, welcome to another news.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate you having me on here.
Mike, would you please give listeners some background about yourself and where you're located?
I'm an Ontario resident, born here. You know, I was born in Toronto, and I live just north of the city. I've been here all my life, basically. And, you know, I'm in my early 50s at this point. I've been doing a lot of Sasquatch research for the past close to a dozen years now. You know, something that came into my life, and it's a passion of mine. It happened when I was spending my spare time in the woods, you know, photographing wildlife.
Mike, would you describe the area that you began to encounter Bigfoot?
This all started earlier on in my life, about 10 years old. And even before that, I had things going on. But, you know, fast forward to 2008, that's when it really, you know, started up. And I started looking into the subject after I'd made a comment on a YouTube channel. Somebody contacted me, asked me if I wanted to go to an area of previous activity. And, you know, I jumped at the chance. And it was in a place north of Toronto that, you know, it was the least area I would suspect to find activity in. And you know, I've learned a lot in this subject, you know, over the years of dealing with this, because I've had a massive experience. And, you know, where I go now, for the most part, you know, we're up in the Kawartha Lakes region of Ontario. It's basically central Ontario. It's all forested in lakes. Ontario is massive itself. We have a 250,000 lakes here. And, you know, Sasquatch activity, if you know what you're looking and listening for, you can find it in the unlikeliest of places. But basically, I'm doing most of my research in the Kawartha Lakes region.
When you say it's sometimes an unlikely place, what do you mean by that?
Well, now you're asking me to jump down that rabbit hole. The truth of Sasquatch, you know, when I went into this, I kept an open mind, and it's something anybody that has an interest in this, it's imperative that you keep an open mind if you wish to learn and accept things that you know, you might not have accepted before. Sasquatch have abilities, and this is why they're labeled a myth. You know, this is why, partially why science has avoided them, because they're, you know, they always go on about there's no body, you know, where's the bodies and bones and things like that. But it's their abilities and their intelligence that has allowed them to stay hidden from us. And a lot of people in this subject are dead against it. They, you know, they will not accept that they're any more than a relic hominid, you know, perhaps an offshoot of Gigantopithecus. But I personally know they're not. There's something different about them, and they hold knowledge of energy that allows them to manipulate, whether it's vibration, energy. It's at a level of quantum physics that they have this understanding that has allowed them to evade us to a point where they can basically stand in plain sight and you're not going to see them unless they allow you to know they're there.
An unlikely place, do you mean, would that be near a human community?
Yes, definitely. And if you look at the reports online, you know, the BFRO, I'm not a fan of the BFRO. In fact, I'm not a fan at all. I don't like the organization one bit because I had some trouble with them. But the one thing they are good for is their database of reports. And if you look at that, you know, there's actually a Google Earth layer that you can put, you know, into Google Earth, and you can zoom in or zoom out and see the reports globally, you know, the ones that they've released. They hold on to a lot more than what they put out there. This I know for a fact. But you'll see that the massive sightings that are being documented, they're, for the most part, they border populated areas, you know, where humans live, and they're seen in our backyards, basically. A lot of them, a lot of reports on that. When I first got involved in this, it was people were under the assumption that you had to go to some remote mountainous region to perhaps run into a small group of them, but this isn't the case at all. It's entirely false. This is not how it is. They are not rare at all. They're actually quite populated, and they're seen all over the world.
Yeah, and that's interesting. Understanding their only habitat might be in the out west or the Pacific Northwest could be from continued media placement. But things have changed out there in terms of investigation and documentation of geographic locations of Sasquatch. Would you tell listeners, please, how you started to learn about and then interact with Bigfoot?
You know, I work in construction right now. My time off, I was spending my time in the woods with some camera gear. You know, I'd go find areas by myself, and I'm always looking for wildlife and, you know, just good photo opportunities. And I think they appreciated that. They were watching. And at one point, I had this epiphany to start searching for them. You know, I don't know why that came into my thoughts, but it did. And it was October 25th. I'd met some person that, as I mentioned, I'd made a comment on a YouTube video and was contacted. And then I ended up meeting up with this guy. It was the first time I met with him, too. You know, I talked back and forth a few times, and then he contacted me, and I said, okay, let's meet up on October. It was a Saturday, October 25th, 2008, and it was, you know, it was kind of a drizzly day, overcast, you know, just very light rain, and he took me into this area that, you know, I kept an open mind, but I thought the same, that one had to go out to the West Coast, right, to have any possibility of any encounters. This guy was showing me what typically Bigfooters do, doing tree knocks and calls, whoop calls, that sort of thing. And at one point, he picked up about a fist-sized rock and he walked up. This was about 4:30 in the afternoon. He picked up a fist-sized rock, walked over to a big red pine, and smacked it. I think it was, you know, three times or something like that. And it was just within a few seconds, I heard this, it sounded like a chest thump, like a triple, rapid, triple, hollow-sounding chest thump. And I knew that, you know, the sound didn't, I didn't recognize it. And I'm pretty good with the sounds in the woods. You know, I've spent enough time in the woods. And right away, something was off, right? So we stood there for a second, and we just listened. And it was only a few seconds, a few short seconds, and this giant triple whoop call came from, it was close. And it filled the forest. It was absolutely massive. He sounded like he was 10 feet tall. And I remember at the time thinking it was so pronounced that I thought, it sounds like he could speak English. Little did I know. When I heard that, I knew exactly what it was. I was looking for them. And when you hear what I heard, it's undeniable. But at the same time, I spent the next 2 weeks denying, you know, playing this over and over in my head from the second I woke up to when I went to sleep. Just constant, it overtook everything, and you know, just basically it flipped my life upside down, blew my mind, and I spent about 2 weeks just playing this over and over, and you know, it's still after that too, but there's a lot of denial. It's strange how your psyche, how your mind denies certain things that, you know, aren't supposed to be real, and it has a really profound effect on someone.
Could you go a little further into describing that denial? What were you thinking? How can this be? I've heard about this, but I didn't think it was real. I know it goes beyond that, but would you describe a little bit more, please?
You know, it was difficult for me to accept, even though I knew, like deep down, I knew what it was. And I knew they were real as soon as I heard that. It's just this effect it had on my psyche. I, you know, it's so unbelievable when it happens. And I didn't even see it, right? I didn't even see the Sasquatch. I only heard it. But there was something deep inside me that it just shook me to my core. And it was after that I spent every weekend frequenting that area. In fact, I went back the next weekend by myself, and I had I ran into the exact same triple chest thump tone that I heard the week before, and I had a strange incident. And there's one thing with Sasquatch activity, the high strangeness, they call it, there it's just thick with it, right? And like for me at this point, it's a normal part of my existence. But after the second incident, when I heard that triple chest thump, I had binoculars, I had a video camera on the camera, I had, you know, all my gear, and next thing I know, I was halfway home in my car, and I gave my head a shake, wondering how the hell I got there. It was like I got sent away. And it's not the first time that they've, you know, messed with my mind like that. It's happened, on two occasions that I can think of right off the hop here. But the other one was when the cottage guy that I work with now, Dwayne, we both had a visual outside the cottage window, and he was standing up in the forest, you know, maybe he's 150 feet away roughly. And I had my video camera, I had all my gear, you know, we're sitting there looking at this hairy tree in the forest, and we forgot about it. And it wasn't until we went back the next visit, it all came flooding back to us. So there's some very, strange stuff going on there.
Would you say hours went by? Was it a different time of the day when you had conscious real-time recollection while driving in your car from that point to when you were in the woods? What did a lot of time go by?
Well, the first one, it would have been, you know, it might have been 20 minutes, half an hour from the spot where I was to get into my car and then where I ended up before realizing, you know, what was going on.
Another element of the high strangeness and possibly a defense mechanism, one of many that are implemented, and another testament as to why they're still around. So eventually that didn't happen again.
I have to mention their intelligence, how extremely intelligent they are. Their consciousness is just, it's unbelievably advanced. Like I said, they have abilities that defies logic. It shatters our paradigm, this stuff. And, you know, this is coming out. We're basically riding the crest of disclosure of all this truth coming to the forefront of mainstream science. And mainstream science is, you know, they're going to have some egg in their face when this all comes out, because they've been ignoring it. You know, I have my thoughts on why things have happened the way they have. But going back to the other thing, I spent about 4 years frequenting that area and other areas, and I had encounters and experiences in multiple locations. And I almost, at this point, because of what I'm dealing with now, it's almost like I was being trained at the time, you know, getting myself prepared for what was to come, so I would have the tools, the knowledge, the experience to know how to deal with moving forward and with what was coming. And that was when, about 4 years later, when this situation came to me, basically fell into my lap, and it ended up private property up in the Kawarthas. It was the cottage owner. I was given some information. I went and interviewed him and his girlfriend, and I got invited out to their cottage. And I knew from the first night that they suspected a Sasquatch activity for about 5 years. It was Dwayne's dad at the time was at the cottage. He sat up in bed early one morning. You know, the sun was just coming up, and he sits up, and there's a Sasquatch standing right outside the window. He had his back to him. And he estimated him, you know, probably about 7.5-8 feet tall. You know, I think it's just kind of a shocking thing. You sit up and that's out the window, you know, and he got up and, you know, went to the bathroom, did his thing, and come back, and it was gone, right? And that was the kind of the last straw, where it's like, okay, they want to reach out and contact somebody and see if somebody would come in to investigate. And I'm the guy who got that information, and I think I'm the right guy, you know, for the job, because it's now been about 7 years, and at this point, Dwayne and I, we've literally had hundreds of experiences together, and, you know, we're very advanced in our experience of Sasquatch contact.
Can you tell listeners about the initial experiences where you begin to record the vocal and speaking? It sounds like English to me.
Oh, it is English. I've recorded audio pretty much, well, every visit that I've spent at the cottage, and I think almost every visit before that. You know, audio has been my choice of tool for documenting. It's something they don't seem to mind at all. In fact, you know, the situation I'm involved in now, they tend to gravitate to my audio recorders, which is just amazing. It's, you know, it's mind-blowing. So, you know, start putting these out. We were putting out multiple recorders, and it took about 8 months. Like, we heard their vocals from basically the first night, and just little bits and pieces here and there, and it took about 8 months of continued visits. And we were going in most weekends. It took about 8 months worth of visits, which we started up in September 2012, and it was about 8 months later, at the beginning of May 2013, that's when I was up in my tent, and suddenly I heard his voice for the first time call my name. And I just, you know, I was mind blown. You know, it's completely unexpected, right? And that's when they really started letting us hear their voices. So that really started up at the beginning of May 2013. And from then on, it was a continued development of, like, I've recorded the one main individual. His name's Nefatia. We call him Nef. And I got his name from, you know, I would stand there because I knew we were being watched. So I'd pat my chest and I'd say my name, Mike. And I'd do that repeatedly. I'd do it often. And I would say Dwayne, Mike Dwayne, and I'd ask for his name. And one day, I don't know how long it took, but, you know, it was some time. played back the audio, and there he was. He was he said my name, Dwayne's name, and then said his own name. And he's also said Anastasia's sister. And we've recorded Neff's voice the most. There are other family members, younger siblings, both male and female. And I'll say this too, with the children, you know, because their lungs aren't, you know, they haven't grown fairly large yet, you know, still they're kids, right? If you talk to one of them on the phone, it would sound just like us. I don't think you'd be able to tell the difference.
Why do you say that?
Just because of vocals that I've documented, you know, that I've pulled out of thin air that we've even witnessed in real time inside the cottage even. You know, there's as much activity that has happened indoors as out, and it's happened in multiple locations. Like, I've had to move a few times throughout this journey, right? And they've shown up in every place, and I've had witnesses, too. They're interdimensional. You know, a lot of people are going to just shake their head and think this is nuts, right? And that's okay, because we're conditioned to think that way, to deny this stuff. But this is a fact. I've been doing this long enough, and, you know, I'd eat my socks if they weren't interdimensional. If it came back and somebody said, nah, they're just this. No, they are. They can move through walls. I've had so much strange stuff happen. Physical contact. This tells me how, you know, a lot of my experiences confirm certain things. Like the physical contact confirms to me that they're invisible, because we've stood there, both Dwayne. There's been multiple witnesses to their physical contact. I've had them pat my head and poke me, and even cover my face with, I believe it's his hand, but I don't know. And last visit, for instance, we were documenting footprints that just appeared out of thin air in real time, and it was an 18-inch footprint, 18 by 7-inch footprint, so that would be a large adult, you know, probably at least 10 feet tall, and this print appeared within seconds, because it wasn't there seconds earlier, and then as we were looking around for more prints, there was a younger individual at the same time. Dwayne and I were standing there beside my car, and all of a sudden he gives me a poke in the back, and he points down. He goes, look, and a footprint appeared, you know, just a couple inches behind my own foot where I was standing, right out of thin air. It just happened, you know, it was seconds old, and then there was two more that showed up. So they have this ability to leave their prints, and they can leave a single print without a trackway. You know, it's just endless, the variety of ways they show their presence. Chris Munch, who was the director, the filmmaker for Letters from the Big Man, that's why Chris got invited in. He's the only outsider that got invited in. He spent 3 nights there on location, and he got to witness some crazy stuff, both indoors and outside the cottage. You know, he validated the activity there, which is on a Speaking of Sasquatch video on YouTube. If you look up Speaking of Sasquatch, Sasquatch, Ontario. And then I think it's episode 8, about halfway through. I think it's about an hour and 8 minutes in, is Bill Scott's interview, and that's Dwayne's dad. His story, he really validates it, too. He's a good soul. Bill, he's a soft-spoken guy. He was there for a lot of the visits, you know, doing his own thing. You know, it's his cottage, right? Doing his own thing with his dog there, and we would document activity, and, you know, we were trying to always hide the strange stuff from him, right? Because we'd be getting things appearing out of thin air that would happen inside the cottage, and we didn't want him to know, because we didn't know how he would react.
Right, I see. Interesting. It's already beyond what most people can handle, but there's another layer to it, and that's the paranormal realm. And our guest is Mike Patterson with SasquatchOntario.com. And Mike, you've recorded some of the best Sasquatch vocalizations that's online, and then you've generously shared this with the public. I'd like to air an interaction you've posted. And this is the one, the March 20th, 2015 conversation with Nefetia. Would you tell listeners about how that came about?
That conversation, actually, that was the very last documented back and forth at that length that I've had with Nefertiti. That was the last one before Dwayne and I had a you know, bit of a falling out due to outside influences. And this is what happens when you get this close to truth. There's some nasty people involved in this subject, and they tried to break us apart. And, you know, it worked for a little while, but we're back together. You know, we're doing our thing. But so the Sasquatch, they knew that this would be my last visit. And what you're about to listen to, that night, I had a layer of snow on my car, and the big guy has a 20-by-8-inch footprint. And he was photographed, not clearly, but photographed through the cottage window. He was maybe 150, 200 feet away. And I went and recreated the scene the next visit, and that put him about, in comparison to me, I'm 6 feet tall. He was about 11 feet, and Dwayne's girlfriend said he was hunched, so he's probably closer to 12 feet tall. And he left. They have a lot of humor. Even he showed humor when he left a partial footprint on the back window of my car in the snow. He put another one at the side of the path, you know, as where we walked to the cottage, and it was the only time I saw his print. When he was photographed, we all discussed it, and we said, let's not go up there to look at the prints. Let's just, you know, be respectful. So I never got to see his print back then. So March 20th, 2015 was the only time I ever saw his footprint, and it was my last visit before the documented conversation, and it was the only time Neff actually said, we love you, which just blew my mind.
Okay, let's have a listen.
Who? What? Nidjadwa.
Nidjadwa.
You.
You, my friend.
Nidjadwa.
I miss you, my friend.
Red.
Who?
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 Okay, that was the March 20th, 2015 conversation with Nefertiti. You can actually hear Neff say, we love you. That they know English.
I've asked them a question. I use a sketchboard, a sketch pad and a chalkboard, and I'm at the point where I ask questions and I'm given written answers. Not always, but they do give me written answers. And I asked them about language, and I said, what language do you speak? What do your people speak? And they wrote all.
A lot of the times it's telepathic. Is that correct?
They have a strong mind speak ability. It's not, you know, I've experienced it on a few occasions. They have an ability to, their telepathy, they can show in different ways, which I have experienced. personally, I love their voices. I love hearing their voices. So, you know, I strive for that. I want to hear them out loud so I can capture it on audio and listen to it over and over, right? But yeah, the telepathy thing, it is part of their makeup, and they do communicate that way.
The next audio we're going to hear is titled Nai-Da-Hu. And Mike, please let listeners know what was going on when you recorded this.
Oh, the Nai-Da-Hu. If that's the first time he said that, I think Neff was trying to teach some of his language. You know, I think from my experience and what I've learned so far, it seems to me from my recordings that I've gathered from him that he may even be speaking multiple languages, even in one sentence. You know, that March 20th, I asked him a question. I said, what is u-u-u-pa-u-ta? It was something that he said on another visit. And then he responds right away with this nin-chu-tu-da-du-da. And he gives this really deep da at the end. And, you know, that's language. It's undeniable. And then, you know, in the same basically sentence or not sentence, but conversation at the end, he says, we love you in English. You know, then there's some ape kind of gibberish thrown in there. So it seems like they may be speaking multiple languages, you know, in one little spurt of vocals, right? But the Nai-Da-Hu, I believe he was teaching me some of his language. It seems to be a greeting. I'm not sure at this point still, but it's a question I should ask and see if I can get a written answer on. The Nai-Da-Hu one, he was trying to teach me some of his own language.
Okay, let's have a listen. Just amazing. I've never heard this before, and I thought initially it's got to be a hoax. They've used some kind of effect and they slowed the voice down, but the more I listen to it, you can tell that there's large lung capacity. You really can't fake that. And learning the context of it all was really fascinating. And when you first brought this out into the public domain, what was it like? What was the criticism like?
Well, the high strangeness, that started up basically pretty much right away. And once I started to see the footprints, when they started showing their footprints in the snow, I remember the first time Duane and I, we witnessed these three footprints in the snow, and there was clean snow everywhere, no footprints anywhere, so except these three, and it's like, how the hell are they doing that?
A footprint would appear. There are no other footprints around, and you looked at that area prior to the appearance of the footprint, and there was nothing. And then, and this is in snow.
The way the situation was at the time, you know, how these footprints were placed, Duane and I are standing there. It's like, okay, well, this is basically impossible. And that's when, for the first time, I said to him, I said, I think they're invisible. And he laughed at me like I was nuts, right? And who's got the last laugh now? But this is one way how they show their presence. They show their presence in a multitude of ways. And what they are, they're teachers. You know, they're not doing this just for the sake of doing it. Like I said, they're advanced in their consciousness. They have an understanding of energy at a level that we don't, and how to manipulate it. And this is what's kept them safe from us, you know, from harming them, right?
Yes, and on the show, we've gone into depth with guests such as Peter Shampoo, Matthew Deleuze, Don Croft, and others about telluric currents, ley line frequencies, and types of orgone energy. Would you tell listeners more about how you perceive Bigfoot naturally working with this kind of energy?
Well, they're written throughout history, and it's funny. There's a stigmatization built around them. You know, the same as with the UFO ET phenomena. You mention any of those things, Sasquatch, Bigfoot. You know, it's all the same. Some people, they'll roll their eyes, or it's not as bad as it used to be. But it's my thought that anybody that's been involved in the UFO phenomena, we all know that governments and military have lied to us for decades. It's they're starting to release this stuff now and trying to control the flow of information. Well, the whole Sasquatch phenomena is all connected. This is all part of it. You know, we're on the verge of the biggest discovery in human history, which I don't think is a discovery. I, like myself personally, see it as a reveal from experiences that I've had. I think they are revealing their existence to us, and I can see how they're doing it too, right? With these little baby steps of how they show their presence to us. They seem to have this understanding of natural energy, the natural elements, what we can't see, but they know how it works. They know how to manipulate it, whether it's shifting their vibration. They can materialize, dematerialize at will. This I know is, I know this for a fact. You know, I'm privy to understanding certain things. You know, I don't tell everything that I know, but I do know that they can materialize and dematerialize at will. And they could do that indoors or outdoors. So they have this understanding of energy, which, like I said, it allows them to stay safe from us, right? They move through walls. Doesn't seem to be any barrier, and it seems that regardless of where you are, they can find you. I flew out to California, stayed there out there with a friend for a week. We went out, did some camping and that, and went to three different locations, and activity was in every one of them. You know, it just seems to follow us around. And there was even one point where I'm riding shotgun in the vehicle there, and I point my video camera out the window, and something was crouched down, stands. I didn't see it until after. It crouched down, stands up, and then it seems to take off just in a blur. I personally believe it's them because of what I'm aware of and my experience, right? So they're very special beings. They are connected to the earth like nothing else that I'm aware of. They are one with the earth. You know, they are just melded in, connected with everything, just at a level that is, it's unbelievable what they're capable of. Difficult for me to really convey, how deeply connected that they are.
Most humans need a certain amount of gear, even for an overnight camping excursion, such as a backpack or a tent, a sleeping bag, then food and water and clothing. Comparably, and in the most basic sense, Bigfoot appears to be naturally adapted to thrive in many types of outdoor environments. What are your thoughts on this aspect?
Well, I know they retain a lot of body heat because I have picked things up that have just been held by them that were, a couple times almost hot to the touch. They have a lot of oil in their skin, which I've witnessed both on my vehicle, which I've used as a tool for interactions. You know, they've left a lot of handprints and stuff, and there's always this greasy film, left afterwards. Even when I'm using this chalkboard, they've done some writing, and and there's just been this kind of smudge of grease left on it too. So I believe that, that the oil in their skin and helps, I guess, retain some of that heat. I'm sure they have
some way of just to maintain their body temperature and so they're comfortable. Because, you know, these guys are even leaving footprints in minus 20 Celsius temperatures. Right? It doesn't seem to be an issue for them.
You can't even rationally think about this because it's sometimes it's just one footprint so in sub-zero temperature.
You know, Jeff, I've had so much of it. Like, Dwayne and I have literally witnessed hundreds of footprints from Neff's family, from multiple individuals, documented most of them. They've done it with handprints and footprints. You know, I've even documented a fingerprint or thumb, one of the two, I'm not sure, on my car. My car was wet at the time, so, you know, it was really seconds old because, you know, that it would run down and this is all posted on my YouTube channel.
That is Sasquatch Ontario. Our guest is Mike Patterson with SasquatchOntario.com. Mike, you experienced some interference, stalking and monitoring, and you documented in one of your videos on YouTube that a notebook was left at a cottage you were staying at, and it detailed in the notebook the monitoring of your research. Would you tell listeners about this whole experience?
We're close to a truth that, like I said, is connected to the whole UFO phenomena. And, you know, I can say that with complete confidence. In fact, I've had five UFO encounters throughout this, four of them on location up in that area. There is a stringent effort by whoever it is, you know, certain people, I would assume military, that, you know, they've suppressed this knowledge and this information from the masses for decades. They've known since the 40s that, from my understanding, about this whole interdimensional thing with UFOs and that, right? So this whole Sasquatch phenomena is all connected to this. And when I got involved with this and started visiting the property, it came pretty quick where, you know, we found out we were being stalked. I caught a couple of people on the property nearby infiltrating the location. You know, they tried to play it off as being there for some other reason, but, you know, I'm a smart guy. I knew what was going on. And one of them, I knew who he was. He was a member of the BFRO, Toronto member.
Isn't that interesting, right? Makes you think about what the BFRO is really about.
No, I'm sure there's some very nice people that are researchers in there, and they probably, you know, they just want to do their thing and help out, and they really don't have a clue what's going on behind the scenes. But the BFRO basically they want to be number one in this subject, right? But at the same time, they avoid the truth. And at this point, I think, you know, they just might be a part of the cover up of, you know, trying to keep this truth at bay, because anybody that delves into that, they ignore it. And I've heard before that anybody that signs up with them basically has to agree that they believe it's a flesh and blood creature. And, you know, and basically that's it, right? Hey, I don't deny they are a flesh and blood creature. From my understanding, they're just capable of a lot more. You know, if their ways are changing, I'm not aware of that. You know, perhaps they are, because this subject has evolved a lot since I've first gotten involved in it. And I knew when I started putting out, it took me about a year before I finally spoke out about the paranormal aspect going on. You know, people would be telling me, hey, follow the prints. You know where the prints go? And I'd say, yeah, I know where they go, and I wouldn't say anything more than that. You know, I never lied about anything. I never embellished anything, and you don't have to with this stuff. It's crazy enough as it is. I can't make this stuff up. It's absolutely ridiculous what I come out with, right? But it's all truth. And Dwayne didn't know at the time that if I was part, like, he wasn't. He knew there was more going on than I did. You know, he basically didn't say anything to me because he didn't really know me, right? And he didn't know if I was part of that. So it got to a point where, you know, his parents are being stalked, both at home and on the property.
you know, when his mom's there alone or when his dad's there alone. And, you know, this understandably got really bothersome for him, right? So he pulled the plug after that March 20th visit. And, you know, I was devastated because the momentum I had going on at the time of those vocal encounters, I was right in the thick of it. It was just unbelievable. Like when you hear that March 20th conversation, I think that was about 9 visits in a row, you know, where I was having those sorts of conversations going on. And so I was devastated to have the, you know, plug pulled on my visits there. And then I found out down the road that, you know, it's because of the stalking and the trespassing that's gone on. And it's still going on to this day. The one BFRO guy has put out dozens. He's obsessed, literally dozens of slanderous, twisted, lying videos trying to paint this as a hoax, you know, trying to paint me in a very negative manner and just really nasty stuff. It's even at the point right now where I'll post something on my Facebook timeline there, you know, and somebody will make a comment, and then this guy will go over, you know, go over to their channel or YouTube channel or Facebook, whatever, and he'll start putting comments and posting links trying to expose me as a hoaxer, right? And, you know, because I've had people contact me and tell me what's going on here, and yeah, it's very obsessive, kind of psychotic behavior that goes on. But you know, I'm a strong guy. Like, I'm a strong individual. I've grown a thick skin. I'm built for this. Like, I can withstand all the BS that comes with this, putting this information out. And you know, at this point, you know, I feel pretty good. You know, I've gone through a hell of a roller coaster ride dealing with this, up and down, and you know, the gamut of emotions. But at this point, you know, I'm working with Dwayne again. We're much more wiser, aware, you know, what's going on. And, you know, the experience we have together is just, it's unbelievable how much experience we've been given, right? So those who get this close to truth and put this stuff out, you're going to get trouble, but you know, you just got to stand up and don't let them, you know, overtake you. And you know, just you got to stand up to them. They're basically cowards. They tend to hide behind fake accounts and stuff, right? So they won't even do it with their real name and stuff. They hide. So it's more of a nuisance at this point. You know, there's no fear on my part. That's for sure.
It certainly sounds like the standard attack strategy, and we've had people on the show go in depth about certain elements of those types of attacks, but there's a reason for those attacks, and the Bigfoot Research BFRO group, it's interesting. It reminds me of MUFON, and yes, I agree, BFRO and MUFON, they're not all bad, but I think they are vehicles for the intel people and CIA types that are paid to keep a lid on things and certain types of truth. And if you would, Mike, would you talk about that layer of truth that maybe certain government agencies do not want to get into the public domain and become common knowledge?
And I know why, because I have that truth and I have that experience. And for me, it's very simple to see why. If once this truth permeates society, people are going to stand up and, you know, all this manipulation going on by governments, by military, by whoever it is, they're going to see right through it and they're not going to stand for it. And you know, all this control that's being imposed on us, you know, all these sanctions, all this crap that, I have my own thoughts on what's going on in the world here. And this truth will basically break down society And, you know, as we have built it, it'll break down the walls, and people will become much more aware, and they won't allow for the policing that's going on, you know, the chipping away at our freedom, and that's all going to fall apart. Once this truth becomes known and people are given the time to experience and understand, it awakens your consciousness. This expands consciousness. You know, this truth will shift the collective consciousness of the human race. And, you know, I'm there already. This is my path. I want to share this. I want to help wake people up because I do not like the way the world's gone. You know, I've been around. I was born in the late 60s, and I know how it was, how it used to be. And, you know, this technology is that's being forced on us, basically, is it's taking us away from who we truly are. We're basically being corralled. You know, it's not hard to see where we're going if, you know, those people who have some intelligence can see down the road of where technology is taking us, right? And it doesn't look good. Nature is what we need, right? So, they're just decimating the forests and clear-cutting, and, you know, they're taking all the nature away from us slowly, a little bit at a time. And this is not a good thing. And I think this is why the Sasquatch are revealing their existence. You know, this is coming out. And it's all part of it, the whole destruction of the Earth. And they see where we're headed if we don't wake up.
Right. There is that part of it where if the public knew about the reality of this other being that needs this habitat or thrives in this habitat that is being deforested, things would be a lot different.
Yeah, logging companies, they know they exist, and this is the last thing they want, because once Sasquatch is proven, they're people. They're not animals. They are people. They may even be the original Earth people, for all we know. They are built for the elements. They, you know, the forest is their habitat, and the last thing logging companies want is for us to know that they exist. And, you know, I know quite a few people that have reported Sasquatch sightings, and the feds will show up. This is on U.S. soil. The feds will show up, and they're adamant that you saw a bear. No, I saw Bigfoot. No, you saw a bear. They're very adamant about it.
That reveals a lot. I do agree with you on that. Mike, we're coming to the end of the show. Would you want to share any particular truth from your experiences with meeting and speaking with Sasquatch?
The whole thing with the Sasquatch contact, it's ongoing. I've had 7 years of ongoing contact. Like I said, I think they've shown up in my life at least at the age of 10, and I think there was things that happened before that. Their intelligence, you know, it seems that this whole multidimensional existence, everything seems to be now, all no past, present, or future. I'm talking, you know, seemingly, because I don't know the answer, right? They have this knowledge. They know what's going on, and they can see this. And they're very, they're wild people, but they're humorous. They're so intelligent, and they're so patient, and they're, their ability at teaching is just phenomenal. That, like, a small gesture just gives so much information, you know. And they know what we focus on, and they utilize that knowledge, that information, to you know, to show their presence to us. And they do it in ways that, you know, they teach us to pay attention. Like some of the things that I can see and hear now. You know, if I'm with somebody out in the forest or something, I'll say, did you hear that? And they'll go, no, I didn't hear anything. You know, I hear these little sounds that I probably wouldn't have heard before, right? It's just this teaching process. It's a baby step process that they give. And it's something, it takes a long time. You know, like I said, I've been at this for 7 years. And the contact is ongoing. I have no control over it. They show up when, where, and how they choose. You know, I can reach out to them, you know, and I do all the time. I try to make that telepathic contact. I've not had a response in real time yet, I've had a response, but it hasn't been when I asked for it. You know, it might be later that day, or, you know, and they also have that ability to, I call it command your subconscious, where in your dream state, they have that ability to make contact in that state. And it's not a dream. It's much more profound than that. And I've had it happen numerous times to me, where they even brought one of their children to meet me. They're an absolutely incredible people. They're not an animal. A lot of people speak of negative experiences and that. And yes, I'm sure there is lots of that going on. You know, you're running around the woods carrying a gun, or if you have a, you know, knuckle-dragging mentality and you're carrying a gun, hey, you might get run out of the woods, or, you know, get some rocks thrown towards you or something, you know, making you leave. But they also have that ability to make you leave without you even knowing it. You know, the variety is just endless, right? So it's just a fascinating subject that we're really just kind of starting to learn about, really.
The subject is so vast, and if Sasquatch didn't have the ability to move in and out of our reality, I don't think they would be around. Meaning if they were imposed to the same density as humans, they would have been long gone. And this ability, as you mentioned, possibly kept them from becoming a mounted trophy. And it's with a lot of gratitude, Mike, to have learned more about them. And of course, through the research and time you've put in to get the proper message out to the public. And thank you very much for doing that. And thanks for being on Another News.
Thanks, Jeff. Oh, I just want to mention, I do have that website, SasquatchOntario.com, and I do have the YouTube channel. I think there's about 70, 75 videos on there, Sasquatch Ontario on YouTube. But there is a lot of audio throughout those videos, so it's all real. There's, you know, there's no hoax. I have no reason to hoax and speak about stuff that I know is just going to bring me ridicule, right? This is the funny part. I get called hoaxer all the time, but I'm talking crazy talk. That if I'm going to hoax, why the hell would I say stuff like that, right?
I understand. Sometimes that level of interference, Mike, is a badge of honor.
Yeah, if none of this mattered, they would just leave me alone, right? You just got to keep an open mind. That's it. That's all I can ask. Just keep an open mind.
Mike, thank you so much. I really do appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. I appreciate you having me on.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.